Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the f*** are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the f*** is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm coming with Mr. Matt Weber on the board in very rainy Chicago this morning. We had a dodge of a deep water thing in the Hubbard's Cave, man. They wanted to throw us into the wall, didn't
they?
That
was a little scary.
Yeah, but
standing water on the expressway when you're surrounded by cars going faster than they should is always a little scary.
Yeah, and we managed to get to a spot where we made it. If we'd have been right up against the wall deep, I'm not so sure we could have stayed straight, but... Where we were able to move over to, we did. So here we are. I mean, that's the good news. Dow up 102, S&P up 475, NASDAQ up 26. We've been up pretty much all week after last week being down pretty much all week. So we're back at kind of record levels. It's amazing what $102 billion the Fed poured in will do for you. But that's what is happening. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing fine. If you don't mind, if you could indulge me for just a moment, I'd like to update the listeners on my plan to live forever.
So far so good.
Yeah.
So far so good. Yep.
That's a. Hey, whoa! There's a body just went by the window here. So far so good. It's just what he said on the way down. Just saying. Hey, I have a hot rumor, but I don't know the details of it. So. But it is a hot rumor that our...
Okay, what kind of rumor is that? Okay, go with it anyway.
Well, it's...
Well, we can embellish it.
It's hard to get details out of the young females. Is that a fair statement? Just saying.
Not one I'm willing to make on the air.
Well, I think our former...
I guess I shouldn't be worried about the young ones. It's the older ones that I should worry about.
Well, our very nice young lady used to help out... when she was in DePaul, Jessica, Jay-Z,
mm-hmm.
I think is in the Miss Illinois pageant this weekend.
Oh, no kidding. Good for her.
And that'll be interesting. All I ever got was sweats and a hoodie. So I never even knew she was that good looking. How would I know? I mean, very pleasant lady. Very nice. I wish her all the luck.
Yeah, Jessica's great.
I mean, what do you... So I said to her, I have a rumor, because of course I got people. I said, I heard a rumor, you're in this thing. And she goes, yeah, it's Saturday. Well, of course, she's texting. Of course, you never talk to anybody. And I said, well, when's it on TV? I'll be sure to watch. And by the way, are you using your name? Because I looked at the names in there, and her name's not there. So do you not use your own name in this? I mean, this is all new to me. And she says, no, it's like pay-per-view, and it's really pricey. So just root for me. And I'm like, how could that be pay-per-view, Kevin? How would anybody even know it was ad?
Yeah, I was going to say, who pays for the views? Is this like some kind of, friends, family, and pervert?
I don't even know if they have the swimsuit competition, but you're certainly not naked, so why would a pervert want to watch it? They're a bunch of good-looking 20-some-year-old girls. I mean, what's the point?
You march a bunch of 20 plus or minus young women across the stage. What pervert wouldn't want to watch?
I suppose. Well, I suppose a lot of people might want to watch. Just saying. But
a lot of people want to watch, but who's willing to pay?
I just hope that her talent competition isn't like being a producer on Stocks and Jacks or something.
Did you ask what the talent competition and what her talent is?
What part of this is all text did you miss? We don't talk to anybody anymore. You think there's actually a conversation here?
No, I doubt that there was. No. Nevertheless, you can get a lot done via text. My problem is, if I'm using the text function on the computer and sending it with a real keyboard, then I'm fine. But if I have to actually tap it into the telephone, into the smartphone, I'm sorry, manual dexterity has never been high on my list of things that I do well.
My thumbs are too
big. Fine motor coordination.
Well, your thumb's got to be too big to do the thumb thing.
Yeah, I know, and I just can't do it. It takes me forever to text.
That's why
I can't text and drive like most normal human beings can.
Well, the lady who is moving in upstairs, Maddie and his lovely bride, found their own place, and apartment was open, and lady moving in used to be a bartender over at the Buckingham when she went to school. Terrific lady, and because she was doing her studying and so forth, and that was a nice part-time job. And so she ends up marrying this guy who's terrific, and they're moving in. So I don't think they're an upgrade from Maddie and Jill, but they're at least, you know, going to be nice people. And when she was text mistress, when texts were new, she was 7,000 inbound. When they used to actually count them up, when you had to like pay for them, like a penny a text or something, she was 7,000 inbound, 7,000 outbound every month. She'd be standing there holding a conversation with you, and she'd be texting with both thumbs as fast as you possibly could go. I'm like, what are you doing? it was so foreign to me, I couldn't even. For a long time, text message is when they used to charge you. Did they used to charge you, what, maybe 3 cents a text or something?
It used to be expensive. Like, it would be like, don't text me. I don't want to pay for it.
Well, but okay, 3 cents for me doing, you know, two texts a day is not exactly a...
Probably nominal, but
yeah.
But yeah, if you're
within your data plan, then.
Yes.
Right. But if you were a young person and, like, let's say your old man was paying the bill, 2-3 months into the bill, you weren't texting it anymore.
Well, I think text messages got to be either they were equal to or they were the only thing with a higher, profit margin than movie popcorn. Because it cost those places like nothing to send it. So even at 3 cents they were making, you know, the profit margin was like 250% or something. It was costing them.
It was a function. It was a function of scarce bandwidth. You know that there weren't nearly as many cell towers, and what they had, the transmission speeds that they had on there were not as what they are today. So as a result, you know, that was how they allocated the bandwidth through pricing. And you know, that's a normal type of arrangement anywhere. But right now, we, you know, in the world, we're swimming in bandwidth, and we're about to get a whole bunch more.
I have a technical question for you, technical mavens. I have a very old flip phone, which I never, you know, it's the world's best alarm clock, right? So, and it's around just in case. So we'll get a load of this. I've had a newer one now for probably 5 years. I still get, so I transferred my number to the new one, for lack of a better term, and I got another number for the old one. You know, so if you ever lost your phone, at least I could use that one to dial it, and my other one will ring. I know where the hell I left it, right? So it has some purpose to it. But I still get calls from the mope who had the number before me. And the guy must have owned everybody in the country. How, after 5 years, you would think that if you can't find the guy, that he doesn't have the number anymore. It's at least 5 years. And I still get calls for the guy. Hell, is this Montel?
Well, you know, stuff doesn't get out of people's contact lists forever. If I went back into my contact list, I'm sure there's people I haven't called for 5 years or more. I just never groomed the list.
But these are all like health clubs.
You never know. Someday I might need it again.
But this isn't like an old girlfriend. This is, you know, some health club that's looking for payment, that kind of thing. You'd think they'd give up after whatever. Just saying. I have a technical question for you guys. You sneaky dudes, what the guy's saying in Caddyshack. I'm convinced that since I signed up for Uber 2 weeks ago, and within like 2 days I started getting marketing calls that I never got, that Uber sold my number, which, you know, I guess shouldn't shock me. What does Uber get for that? Is it 10 cents? Is it 10 bucks? Can't be $100. I mean, what do you think they get for that?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer. That's probably pretty easy to discover what you get per account or per phone number if you sell the data. I just have never been involved in selling the data, so I don't know.
You have a guess, maybe? I mean, why would it even be worth it to Uber if they get like a buck? You know, unless they just.
I doubt they get a buck. If you have. Think of it like advertising clicks on a website. I'm guessing now. This is total speculation, but the click throughs on advertising are they're very trivial per click. But it's so cheap to put it there, and what you do is you pay out every time somebody clicks through. But you probably don't need very many sales to make. One sale, sell one item for $20. That's even if you were paying a penny a click, that's not much money.
I'm reading an article here that
anytime what's a $20 is 20 times 100, so it's 2,000. If you're paying a penny a click, 2,000 cents divided by $20, something like that. The break even is very low on it.
I'm reading an article here that says, and it was reported, apparently, and I'll have to dig into who reported this originally, that a single internet user, an email of a single internet user is worth $89.
Really?
To any brand. And then it says, your total amount of data, just, anytime you sign up for something free where you're giving them your information, phone number, address, email, whatever, which people do all the time in exchange for free services, they're willing to do that, they say you're worth $35 a month.
Well, and like the click-throughs Kevin's talking about, if I get, Duluth Trading on the thing and I click through, do they get more money if I actually buy something?
I doubt it.
You don't think so? Maybe?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so, yeah. I think they sell your data and they're done with transactions over.
It would be too hard for, it'd be real easy for the receiver of the click to track, but it would be very difficult for the sender to validate.
Okay. Hey, I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but I'm very curious. I mean, Maddie, which I thought he would know all about it, he never heard of the guy, seeing that he's in internet security, this McAfee thing, is this starting to form a... Why does this feel to me like this is forming a pattern, Kevin? The story, I should relate the story. This, I don't know the full story about this dude, Matt. You might want to look him up, but he created the McAfee software, which a lot of people have.
Yep.
So clearly the guy knows a lot about... I mean, he's probably a idiot savant when it comes to internet security, right? Which probably means he's hacked into a few people. I don't know this.
Yeah, except for the fact that he hasn't been involved in the business for, two decades or so.
Right, but I mean, I don't think he forgot all that stuff. What I'm saying is, and I don't know.
It's not what he forgot. Is has he kept up with it? And, there's
maybe
a chance that he did.
But he ended up leaving the country. He was pissed off about a million things. He didn't want to pay tax, whatever. So wasn't he down in, wasn't El Salvador or some place in Central America, right? And then they tried to catch him on a murder charge, and it turns out he didn't do it after they chased him for forever. I mean, this is off the top of my head. So he ends up with a tax evasion charge, and now he's in Spain, and Spain ends up jailing him for a tax evasion charge in the U.S. Now, why Spain would do that or not, I mean, I don't know the international law on that, but it seems to me, why would they care if somebody paid taxes here and if they are protesting? Anyway, so the guy's in jail.
Extradition request.
Yeah, they give him an extradition thing, and all of a sudden the guy's found hung in his jail, a la Epstein and God knows who else. This is starting to form, and he's one of these guys that, of course, said that if you ever... and plus, yesterday, who was the reporter yesterday? Maybe it was found dead. The guy that... what do you say about Clinton? He broke the Clinton-Epstein connection. He was found dead yesterday. And he's another guy that said... If people say I committed suicide, they're wrong. Like a year ago, I didn't commit suicide, so don't believe it. Of course, that doesn't mean he didn't, but I'm starting to see somewhat of a pattern here where, as I'm sort of sensing, the whoever I'll use this term lightly, whoever's really running our government and not the people we think we elect, there seems to be, if you start going after them, you're dead now. I mean, it appears. Now, I'm going to say there's got to be people that didn't want this guy McAfee singing for whatever reason, and I don't know who he had on what or somebody or what emails he read, but it seems to me this is really suspicious, Kevin. It just seems to me. I don't know. Epstein, it's pretty obvious because look at the people that were involved there, the royal family and everybody else. I mean, a lot of people didn't want that guy talking. But, I mean, is this starting to become pretty obvious to other people, other than me, that there's a pattern here? Doesn't mean like there's somebody doing it, but is it just me being suspicious as hell or what?
Well, people have been claiming forever that anybody who crossed the Clintons would wind up dead eventually. So, I don't know. There's not a lot of hard evidence. So, without evidence and without information, the law is the law of nature is that the crazy speculation will fill the void. I don't know if it's crazy or not, Tom. How much do you believe in coincidence?
Well, with one person...
When did it stop being a coincidence?
At some point, I'm willing to say that maybe Epstein did do it himself, but now there's this guy. And what if there's like five others over the next decade? Am I supposed to believe all of them found a way to hang themselves in jail? I mean, at some point,
what if Jolaine Maxwell hangs herself?
Yeah, I mean, it's starting to... I mean, I honestly thought that out of all the people in death row... They sure put Timothy McVeigh to sleep quick enough, didn't they? And I never thought he acted alone. I'm just saying. I mean, I'm not an Wayne Mattson conspiracy kind of guy, but they're testing me. I don't think. Well, what did I guess my problem is I watched The Godfather, and what did Kay say to Michael? Senators don't have people killed, and he said, "Now who's being naive, Kay?"
Yeah.
I don't know if I believe. Betty, do you believe that at some level?
I don't believe anything without evidence.
Okay.
Doesn't mean it's wrong. I don't have the energy or the mental capacity to make up conspiracy theories. Now, if I saw evidence on something, I would absolutely, yeah, because it could add up, sure.
I would just say that for me, maybe, and I'm reasonably handy, not like I'm a carpenter or anything, I would find it really hard to hang my ass in jail. I mean, it wouldn't be something that I would easily do. I don't think that's something anybody can just, unless somebody like throws a rope in there and says, have at it. I'm not so sure it's all that easy. Do you?
It's easy in the movies.
Yeah, well, yeah. You see the sheet hanging there and a guy, but I don't know. I mean, I know that, being a hangman back in those days was really quite the profession to do it just right. It just doesn't seem like, hey, here's the office, let's look for a piece of string and hang my ass. I mean, I don't know that it's that easy. Just saying.
Well, let's put it this way. Do I trust powerful people to always behave appropriately and to not eliminate those who are in their way? No, I don't trust them. Does that mean it's true in each case? I doubt it. Does that mean that there might be some cases? Yeah, I'm sure there are, because we know historically we know about a number of those situations. So I guess we have to see what plays out, what gets suppressed. But we've also seen certainly over the last couple of years, how easy it has become to suppress information, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think it's easier to suppress information now.
Is Carl on today? Is Carl coming on after me?
Yeah, well, I think he is.
Yeah, Carl got Twitter jail for a little while.
Actually, Matty, you might want to. I don't think I specifically asked him, but why don't you send him a tweet? Because I didn't. I hope he is, because otherwise it's Matty and me. But no, I forgot to. We had a whole bunch of stuff.
Oh, God, no, not that.
No, we wouldn't want that. The weird part, a lot of the stuff that has got me crazy on this, I know Matty, hates listening to it, and I do too, by the way. I keep talking about the Fed and money supply and what they're doing and how they're pushing stocks up and pushing asset prices up. The part of me being very concerned about this, Kevin, is I sense a difference, and I can't encapsulate it. If I had to write a paper on it, I don't know if I could do it. I can't. There's somewhat of a difference to me in the people that are making the decisions now versus the people not that long ago. I mean, a while ago. I mean, it's not like, you know, Mayberry or any of that kind of crap. But I get the feeling that because people couldn't move very, very much. I mean, the first time it really shocked me, the mentality, and I should go buy it for everybody who's on the thing. Your old place, Better World Books, got about 10 copies at like $2 a copy. I should get the Sovereign State of ITT. And the page in there where Harold Janine essentially was talking regarding what governments are and what his job was, and how he was this international guy that governments were just a bother, and he could go live anywhere, so there's no way anybody was going to really catch him no matter what he did. And his job was to play one against the other and make buffoons out of them, because they were halfway to buffoons to start with, and just make money for his shareholders and himself. So I don't think people have changed since, you know, Greek tragedy was written, for God's sake. But even then, but there's a difference when, like when Henry Ford wanted to raise prices, I'm sure he did, because, you know, he was kind of a cutthroat kind of guy, but he had a governor on him, you know, sort of like your mom. His governor was, I can't raise prices past the fact that my people here can afford them. Yet now, if you're in China, and your people are making $3 an hour, and you can export the stuff to the U.S., you don't care about your people, whether they can afford it or not. You're not selling them. They're not even your customers. So there's a lot of things have changed that make me very sinister, in the sense that, you know, if I was making PT boats, World War II, I use this example all the time, I could charge 5% more if I had a good congressman, maybe 8%, but I can't triple it and break the government's back, because I plan on living here. And by the way, if my neighbors are all broke, what do I do after the war? I got to sell them something. So I mean, there was some kind of a, even if it wasn't like people weren't always a little greedy. I mean, they can be, some are, but there seemed to be natural barriers to it. And now I don't know if there is. I mean, I don't know that you know, maybe he does, maybe he's a good guy. Who the hell knows? I don't think that the guy who runs Facebook or the guy who runs is beholden to anybody. And I don't. In the Fed, I think the people who are running these asset prices up on, someday they're just going to sell and go live in Monaco or some damn place. I don't think there's anywhere near the governor, the natural governors that there were 30, 40, 50 years ago. And it makes me really afraid, honestly. Am I totally wrong here?
Well, or maybe the governors are the things that will control behavior are that people are, so many powerful people are compromised. And therefore the governor is kind of the puppet master behind the scenes, trying to, you know, saying where the boundaries are and what the priorities are.
Well, this thing with, I'm not a securities attorney, but I look at this thing in AMC. Now, I know that the world was the Wild West when it came to securities during the 20s. How did that work out? Really? I mean, it didn't work out so good. So after that, in the 30s, and I'm not saying Roosevelt was a Solomon. I mean, if he was all things to all people, he wouldn't have people in camps. But I mean, he wasn't perfect. But in terms of this, all of a sudden, people came up with the genius idea that, hey, if you're going to go out and raise money from the general population, you need to have a prospectus. You need to tell everybody who the hell's involved, where you're getting your money, what the business plan is, you know, some sort of a prospective income statement, you know, what property you own. You know, it was called a prospectus. There was some logic to it. And by the way, after your company is up there, you can't just go out and say you made $1 billion. You need an audit. You need an independent auditor to say you actually did make $1 billion. I mean, there was, for a few years in 34 and 33, we injected some common sense into the system, if you're trying to raise money from people and at least be straight. It doesn't mean your business can't go under with you trying your hardest, and it doesn't mean people can't lose money. That's not the objective. The objective is at least to have a level playing field in terms of information and so forth. And now all of a sudden you get this AMC. Well, somehow, some way, people find out there's a short end. Everybody knows. You don't know exactly the price, but you look at what they've done. They've been closed down. We're not talking about a new railroad, a new TV station, a new, a new .com thing, or even a new system or a cancer drug. We're talking about a company that's sitting right there. that isn't making any money, right? And they don't have a whole hell of a lot of revenue. Now, of course, they had COVID last year, but you can tell see what they did the year before. So you might say, even if I'm really generous and they come back to where they were in 2019 and can raise prices 10%, here's the number. Here's how much they can make. And oh, by the way, some of these places seem like they don't even want to give these places first time movies, you know, at all anymore. So maybe the whole thing is screwed up. All of a sudden, somebody runs his stock up, and from, you know, 5 to 60 or some crap. Now, the company has some treasury stock, which means treasury stock, for those that don't know, is stock that you have issued and bought back, which used to be illegal, by the way. But now, all of a sudden, that's all they talk about is banks and everybody buying their own stock back. The single biggest buyers in the market in the last 15 years that have caused the rally that's there has been the companies buying their own crap back. Almost 90% of the new money in the market is companies buying their own shit, basically. So these guys, now all of a sudden, they've got some treasury stock, and now you can sell your treasury stock. So they do that at these ridiculous prices. They sold it at like 25. Then they say, now the stock's trading like 45 or 50 or 60. And they're going, holy bleep, Batman. So somehow or another, they sell more stock. I don't know that there was a prospectus. I don't know. And then people on TV, oh, the SEC's kind of looking. They already sold it. The SEC's looking at what? They're looking at comic books in the can? I mean, what are they doing? I mean, now all of a sudden, believe it or not, Kevin, the company now is worth something because they're able to sell stock at this ridiculous price. So now they actually have cash, and they are worth something. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, but to think that this is anywhere near the spirit of the 33 and 34 Act is so far afield, and people love it. They think it's great. Hey, the stock's now worth something. When I bought it at 5, now it's worth 20, and I made out like a bandit. I look at this, and I go, what are we doing here? I mean,
And so the key word is worth. It's not worth it. It's trading at that, but it's not worth that.
Well, now it actually sort of is because they were able to sell shares at $60 or $45 or whatever. I mean, I'm saying, but now they have a cash. It's probably still not, quote, worth what it's trading in terms of earnings. But now at least they have cash in the bank. So you can say, well, God, these guys got $10 a share, or 5 or 15 or whatever the hell it is. But they got it by selling this. But what happened to the prospectus? What happened to all that stuff? I didn't see any of it. I mean,
Well, the good part of this conversation, Tom, is that now Matt has a title for the show when he uploads it called Comic Books in the Can.
That's right, Comic Books in the Can. SP Futures up 550, NASDAQ Futures up 2075. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. but I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 4.25, NASDAQ futures up 12, so looks like we're retaining, at least so far, a nice move up the last couple of days. Dow futures up 108. Individual stocks causing that. Caterpillar's up $1.61, so that's a lot. Goldman Sachs up $1.18. We've got J.P. Morgan up 86 cents. We've got Nike, which had earnings up $17, so that'll do it. Nike, nobody seems to care that you buy all that stuff in China, so they buy their Nikes, but they're up 17.40. They had earnings last night. Well, I'm glad I didn't do that play. I was going to put it, hoping that they stayed even, and I didn't do it. But 17.40, it's 11, 12%. That's a lot. Obviously, they did well. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 22.2%. Europe's been real slow this week. FTSE up 9.1%. I mean, they've had some movement to the upside, but it's just... it's been muted, just kind of even, kind of boring, but up a little bit. The CAC ran down 7 at 0.1%. They were up like a full percent yesterday, so it's not much we give back at all. Who knows? Maybe it won't be any by the time they close. Nikkei up 190.7. Shanghai, these guys are actually going the same direction on the same morning for the first time that I can remember. Shanghai up 40, that's 1.1%. Hang Seng up 405, 1.4. South Korea's KOSPI is the name of their index, closes at record high. So all of a sudden they're through to the upside there. Yesterday, Dow was up 322. Big day in the Dow. S&P up 24. NASDAQ up 97. So we've had a real powerful week. Really doesn't look like it's had any chance of, any signs of turning around here, at least not today. Bonds, 10-year, 1.49, right where they've been. Bund, minus 0.17. They've actually come, they're not positive, but they've moved up from minus 0.29 maybe a week and a half ago. So they've actually moving toward zero here. We'll see if they make it this time. Japan, positive 0.04. UK, positive 0.75. Oil, down 18 cents, but over 73, 73.12. Brent down 13 cents, 75.43. Natural gas up another 3 cents, 3.45. I don't know when I've seen it this high in June. But there must be people using a lot of natural gas, maybe out west with the big heat, because a lot of your smaller power plants that you just turn on when you need them are natural gas, so they must be using a lot of it out there. RBOB unchanged at 227. Gold is up 830 to 817.85. Silver up 22 cents to 26.27. Gold's trying to make it back to 1800. It was almost 1900 a week ago. But 1800, I guess, is a start if you're long gold. Copper up a penny, 432. A lot of stuff here, Matty. By the way, we didn't give the jobless claim numbers yesterday. They were back up over 411, back over 400 at 411. So those numbers are kind of plateauing a little bit, even though everybody claims they had help wanted signs out there. Somehow or another, people are still getting laid off or whatever. It's kind of crazy. What do you got for us, Matty? Traffic, weather, sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a significant issue already right as the Edens meets the Kennedy on the inbound side, where a semi jackknifed and the trailer is leaning, and it's causing a level one hazmat situation that's blocking the two right lanes, and it has the Edens completely jammed up right as it merges with the Kennedy. So if you can avoid that, I would, because it's going to only get worse as the cleanup and investigation continue this morning in the rain. But that's a big deal right now, coming inbound right as the Edens and Kennedy merge.
Won't the rain just dilute it and run down the sewer?
It depends on what it is. But yeah, I suppose that could happen. Outbound side is looking okay. No issues on the Eisenhower. We have standing water on the Stevenson as you're coming inbound on I-55, but specifically right before California as you approach downtown. So you can navigate around that, but you're going to have to slow down and expect some delays on the inbound Stevenson. That's only going to get worse, too, from the storms last night and this morning. Dan Ryan looks okay. I-57 and the Bishop Ford are quiet. Off the expressways, there's all kinds of issues down in the south suburbs with flooding. So keep that in mind. And then we have multiple accidents reported on 8094 on the westbound side at Torrance Avenue. That's causing significant congestion on 8094. I don't know if those are standing water related. I would bet they probably are if there's multiple in the same area. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, more rain in the forecast. In fact, we have rain in the forecast, at least to a certain extent, for the next 7 to 10 days. Just a lot of storms in the area here late June, early July, which can happen. Today, rain with a high of 81. Right now it's overcast and 70 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, no rain down there. Sunshine with a high of 106. Right now it's clear and 83. In sports, the Cubs threw their 17th no-hitter as an organization, although last night was a weird one in their 4-0 win over the Dodgers, because there was so many walks by Zach Davies. He was pulled after 6 innings due to pitch count in spite of having a no-hitter, but he walked 5 guys. And then they went to their usual shutdown bullpen of Tapera, Chafin, and Kimbrell, who have been spectacular all season. They were spectacular again. No hits for Tapera, but another walk. No hits for Chafin, but another walk. And same for Kimbrell. No hits, but another walk. So the Cubs walk 8 batters, but don't give up a hit, and they don't give up a run in their 4-0 win. It's the 7th no-hitter in Major League Baseball this year in June, which ties an MLB record for a whole season. So it would appear that that record's going to get shattered this year with the amount of no-hitters. White Sox were off last night. They'll host the Mariners tonight, weather permitting, at 7:10. Diamondbacks were off last night as well. They're at San Diego tonight. That's a 7 o'clock Arizona first pitch. And in NBA basketball, the Phoenix Suns had a chance to put a stranglehold on the Clippers with Chris Paul coming back and Kawhi Leonard still out, but they lost Game 3 last night in L.A. 106-92 was the final. Suns lead that best-of-seven series 2-1. Chief.
Eddie, a level 1 hazmat is an incident involving hazardous materials that can be contained, extinguished, and or abated using resources immediately available to the public sector responders having jurisdiction. In other words, the fire department can clean it up.
I hope someone can.
So you don't have to go. You don't have to get like special guys.
Yeah,
with suits.
It would be. It would be things like oil. It would be. I'm assuming you wouldn't be level one if it was something highly flammable, like a gasoline spill. But I even suppose that could fit the category.
Just put sand on that, I assume.
Well, yeah, all of it is stuff that you know that you want to absorb, and then you need to haul it away, and you need to properly dispose of it, and it's a big deal. You know, cleaning up any kind of hazardous materials still is a very big deal.
The company
and a couple of notes. The no hitters. It still won't surprise me if we don't see another one the rest of the year.
Yeah, they come
and you know, and it won't surprise me if we do. But I've seen this before. I forget what year it was. We had a whole bunch in a row in like May, and then one more in September, and that was it. So it just wouldn't surprise me to say this is an anomaly, and we sort of go back to normal afterwards. So that's one. Let me see. You mentioned the jobless claims. I would speculate, and this is strictly speculation, needs to be a hypothesis to test, is that you had a lot of businesses who were on the brink, and they were happy to get back to work. And if you got back to work, only to find out that you still couldn't hire anybody, that you might have finally succumbed, and we may be seeing a lot of that type of activity. And then the third thing is you mentioned Nike in China. There are so many companies like Nike out there who they say, well, we have verified that they're not making our products in the Uyghur camps, and that doesn't do it for me.
No,
that doesn't do it for me at all, because the same people you're buying from, the same people who are running the Uyghur camps and making other people's products there.
Yeah, we don't seem to have any the morals on this stuff are getting a little low, I think, but that's just, I don't get. I mean, where is there anybody who, if you wanted to buy athletic stuff here, who'd you buy it from?
New Balance is generally made in the United States.
Okay.
And they have good quality shoes, too.
There's one.
I told you guys and the listeners the story of the family decided they weren't going to buy anything from China the entire year. They made it to May. Struggling, but they made it to May, and they ended up having to do it. I guess they didn't have to, but they did. What do you suppose was the product that sunk them?
I don't know, dog food?
No, they promised the little 4-year-old daughter, or 5-year-old, wherever she was, 3-year-old, they promised her one of those blow-up wading pools. Every single one was made in China. So it was either go back, promise the little girl that doesn't know anything about China, or go and buy a Chinese wading pool, a blow-up pool. But they made it that far. They made it to May. What's the problem?
You know, I don't know how moms are with it, but I can tell you dads will never break a promise to their little girl.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They have us wrapped around their little finger.
I think the moms understand that and don't pay any attention. I think they're a little stricter with the girls than the guys are. The guys are toast. They're useless. I mean, I know I would be.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, so that's pretty much how it works. So, you know, I think that's kind of an important concept, and in fact, I had queued up for last evening's class, but we didn't really get to it. Imagine that, me getting behind on my plan schedule plan because I talk too much. But we will lead with the interview that you did with the fellow from the American Uyghur Organization. That's going to find its way into the classroom on next Thursday.
Is it just out of sight, out of mind, Kevin? Don't tell me about it. You know, I'm putting my hands over my ears like
you. Yeah, I can't hear you.
Yeah, it's really.
I actually think a lot of it is. I think it is out of sight, out of mind. I think there's a lot of people who just don't know, because it's not front and center in media. Every once in a while, there's some reports, but it's not really front and center. And many of the same people who would be reporting it are actually beholden to the Chinese Communist Party anyway, because whether it's your business and you want access to that market because that's where all the growth is, or whether you're media and you have bureaus in Beijing and throughout China, and you know they're kind of told that if you don't want to be kicked out of here or possibly even arrested, then you better shut up.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, we don't have media that just tells them to go pound sand.
I'm not so sure what the media is now. That's why we need to get we had some view of that with Wayne a couple weeks ago, and but I really would like to get if she still thinks we're high enough level, we need to get Cheryl Atkinson back. Because, I mean, I can't even, when I pick up the Tribune, there's nothing there. I mean, and they're laying off people. John Cass just quit, or took the package. He's the one guy they got left that writes a decent article.
He took the package, but he's set up his own little news organization now.
Okay, well, good. I mean, I don't know what we're getting, but I'm looking at this, you know, if Carl calls in, which I hope he does, we'll, but every place I go, you know, you stop in for a cup of coffee or for a beer, whatever it is, everybody is manipulated into this story of nobody can hire anybody. Okay, now I'm looking at these numbers, and it looks to me like we've got, you know, we're back to 151 million people that are that are back at work. All right, and in May of two, and when we go back to the end of 2019, it was 157. So there's 5 million people less employed. Well, there's got to be places that are still aren't open, like Chicago downtown. There's got to be 200,000 people down here that have no place to go to work. So it's not all of these 5 million are sitting on a couch waiting for the phone to ring. I mean, the phone isn't ringing for a lot of places. I look at these numbers, I can't fathom. I guess what I'm seeing, I know that right now the reluctance of somebody to go back to work for $10 an hour, even though the $10 might have been okay, you know, a year ago, February. A lot of change in the world right now. $10 isn't cutting it. I mean, in terms of gas prices, in terms of used car prices, in terms of if you're going to Hammond, the toll on the Skyway. I mean, the $10 to me is probably worth 8.5 now. So, but having said that, if guys raise the, I don't see where is this coming from, Kevin. Is it the people are laid off on the upper level? I actually read an article. Some lady wrote, she's a from your damn near your hometown, Manny, somewhere in Iowa. Where are you? Where part of Iowa are you from?
I went to high school in Cedar Rapids.
I think she was from Cedar Rapids. She was talking about she got laid off from a job, but you know, like we're seeing in these unemployment stuff, she got laid off for a job. She's a marketing person. She'd been worked there 30 years, where she's making $65,000. And she's like, everybody's beating her on the head. Why don't you take one of these $10-an-hour jobs? She goes, I'm looking for another job in marketing. That's what I do. I think we're getting people laid off at one level, Kevin, because these unemployment claims every week are not. 411 is a lot lower than 700, but 411 is real high. So somehow or another, we're getting a topsy turvy thing here to where we somehow are trying to demand that those people go to work at Walmart. And I don't know, they may end up there. Okay, I don't know if that's positive. Something weird's happening.
Well, it's not positive. So what's happened? Well, whether you believe that this is all part of the Great Reset or it's just an economic reset, it doesn't really matter. A lot of jobs got eliminated in the last couple of years. How many people got furloughed and they're never called back because, businesses figured out that, we can survive without a lot of people? How many businesses automated, stuff that wasn't automated before, because they really didn't have a choice. So, a lot of activity got forced to happen, and it's going to be one of the big shames of this lockdown is the amount of stuff that got eliminated for good. And it's not just businesses that got put out of business, because eventually that void will be filled, at least to the extent that there's demand for it. But by the same token, you're sitting there looking at just a lot of economic upheaval, and nothing ever goes back to the way it was. It goes back to some new kind of way, and I don't know what that new way is going to be.
Well, we've been talking on the show, and I know it seems scattered, but to me, it's not exactly scattered, because we talk one day about somebody with a plumbing company that has five trucks, and all of a sudden, the housing is starting to be built again, so the guy needs another truck. He's never missed a payment at Webby Plumbing in 40 years, but now our idiots at Dodd-Frank are making it easy. Why it's even their business, I have no idea. That your bank should get a personal guarantee out of you. And oh, by the way, you're probably paying, probably pushing 10%, 8%, 7.5%, even with a splendid credit rating, where the Amazons of the world are borrowing at 2% or 2.5%. So that's been there for a while. So, but it absolutely doesn't dovetail, which what you just said, Kevin. How hard is it for us if we sit there and go, man, there's 25 people out here building houses and they can't find a plumber? Well, we happen to know a couple of guys that that are pretty good plumbers. They just don't have the organization to schedule themselves and wherever. And all of a sudden it's a Kevin and Webby Plumbing Company, and now we need four plumbing trucks, and we need a storefront of some kind. Could be small, and we need a little bit of storage. All right, so it's $200,000. I don't see us walking into Lakeside Bank or BMO Harris or somebody and getting that loan. Do you? I mean, what are they going to?
So who's going to go in and get the loan? Who's going to go in and fill that void? It's going to be very, very large companies. And many of them are going to come in leading with big investments in automation rather than hiring individual people.
Or, I'll give you a third choice.
You know, was that inevitable all along? Yeah, it probably was, but it was going to happen piece by piece over time. Now all of a sudden we have poured an accelerant on that fire, and you know now we're seeing what happens.
But why all of a sudden, when business is good, and this guy or lady, whoever runs the plumbing company, has never missed a check, their credit rating is outstanding, do you need their house? I mean, why the bleep do you need their house or a personal guarantee? And of course, isn't that subtly behind the lines here, we've reached the point where, first of all, we have guarantees in government. I mean, if Powell and his people are screwing up as bad as I think they're screwing up, it doesn't matter. They're still going to go back to be a professor someplace. Nothing's going to come down on them. If, you know, somebody, one of these firms, makes some huge purchase and the thing goes sour and the place goes from $150 down to $2, nothing's going to happen to that guy. Or if he even does something bad, the corporate veil protects him. But now what we've really done is we've saying the corporate veil or the limited liability corp, LLC, that the now all of a sudden at a certain level, it doesn't exist. So for Kevin and Maddie's plumbing company, there is no corporate protection. There is no LLC protection. You're going to have, if you want to borrow enough for a postage stamp, you're going to have a personal guarantee on it. I don't think that Jeff Bezos has signed a personal guarantee for the money they just borrowed at 2.5%, did he? Have we really changed the law?
So now you go back on some of this legislation and ask yourself the question, is it unintended consequences or is it fully intended consequences?
Well, that's why I'm getting, I'll use the term grumpier lately. I think I'm getting the feeling it's intended, Kevin. And I whenever I see somebody hung in jail somewhere that I don't think hung himself, I often wonder, does that intensify my idea that it's really, is there a connection there? There probably isn't, but in the broad brush of things, maybe there is. I mean, what is going on here? I mean, everything that could possibly happen.
It does make you want to ask the question. That doesn't mean that you have the answer.
Oh, absolutely.
It certainly makes you want to ask the question.
Absolutely, without a doubt. I mean, do I know what happened to this guy? I don't. But I'm saying, how is it that... Now it's years later from Dodd-Frank. And I will say that one of the things when you listen to people in the House of Representatives grilling Powell, two things cross your mind. One is, Powell's not going to answer any question. Why is he even there? I mean, it's an embarrassment to watch the guy talk. Okay, but the people asking the questions, 90% of them have no idea what they're talking about, what the Fed even does. But they don't have the education I do. And I'm sure they have all kinds of other stuff that I don't know anything about, that they know a hell of a lot more than I do. So it's a question of but doesn't matter. They want their face on TV if they don't know anything, which is a problem to me. But so all of a sudden, this is going down. But I'll say this, Kevin. One thing I do think about our governmental system, I don't think that people are all that shy. Maybe not in Chicago. I mean, it's hard to call up, Bobby Rush, and rag at him about some bill the guy knows nothing about. I have very little respect for the man, or a couple of guys we have here, ladies. They're not all black or white. There's a smattering of them. But I'm going to tell you, I think that people don't hold back. That someplace, somewhere, these guys have gotten the plumber calling up and say, hey, what the bleep? Why all of a sudden do I got to sign this thing at this bank? What did you guys do to me? I can't believe that they're oblivious to it after, however many years it's been. I mean, it has to... I don't think people are that shy about talking to these people, especially in smaller towns. Hey, how come all of a sudden I need a personal guarantee? And they say it's government. Well, you're government. What'd you just do to me? I can't believe that they have not heard it, that they have to listen to Stocks and Jocks and realize that this is a problem, Kevin. And now they just can't do anything about it. They won't. They can't reopen it. I mean, I don't understand the stickiness there. Do you? You've been involved in this more than I have.
And I don't have the answer either, Tom, or the full understanding. I think a lot of it is that that you know you can't control it, so you figure out how you can adapt.
But I mean, your representative,
that's really it. Is the people who will survive are really good at infinite game thinking, where your whole mission is to stay in the game, not necessarily to max out your profitability. And if your mission is to stay in the game, I think you can do it. But if your mission is, Amazon can do in terms of profitability, or a company like that, sorry, you can't compete. So you don't go head to head with them. You find your niche and you play the game.
But every single place you turn. But you, by the way, you mentioned a few minutes ago that you either have to sign away or there's going to be somebody fill the void. You know what I'm seeing? And you know, Maddie, please let me know if I'm right or wrong. You know what I'm seeing? Nobody's matching the void. But you have people that need a window put in their house for years now, and it's still they can't find anybody, or they have to go to. One of the guys I know just
true, but they will. And remember, we've talked about how fleeced up the supply chains are, and they all have to get into some kind of equilibrium. It's just that we bleep them all up at the same time. It has been forever that you can get a supply chain for a product a little out of whack, and this the phenomenon is called demand amplification, and what it really means is that as you get farther away from the consumer, the shifts in the anomalies in the supply chain get worse. But I'll see if I can find a nice little video to send out to the listeners after I get off on what demand amplification is. Now, but imagine that's not a single product. That is everything all at once. And it all has to find its way back, and it's all interrelated. And this is going to take a long time. It's going to take a long time to have whatever normal winds up being in the markets for just supplies, for raw materials, for parts, for all of it. It's going to take a long time for that to come back to something resembling normal.
Well, the
or whatever normal is going to be.
The people that are filling the void, like you're talking about. Everybody knows I do some remodeling, and I have guys that work for me, and I have a friend who has some issues. His place is getting older. He's an attorney guy. He's been on the show, so I won't name names. But let's just say he's not as good at this as I am. Is that a fair statement, Kevin? And so he has a window going in, and I'm putting some in one of the apartments, and I went out and bought seven of them, you know, to fill the thing up, I've got guys that'll put them in, but the windows cost me $1,900, which is way more than they did 2 years ago, by the way. But I go to this place where they make them, and you give them the measurements, and they do a nice job. But you have to go get them, you know, that sort of thing. And then these guys I'll pay, you know, the $1,000 or something to put them in. So it's nothing. But this guy has one window. It's, you know, reasonable size. He gets somebody from Menards over there. The guy wants like $3,500 for one window. I mean, like, really? Really? He had a door that goes from his house to his deck, and it's a steel door, but it's not fancy or anything. Guy shows up from Felco. He wants $4,500 to put the door. The door costs $300. I mean, we're you're right, Kevin. People are filling the void, but wow.
People, yeah, and how, you know, and taking advantage of the situation however they can. If you told me that much for a door, I'd say I'm hanging up beads.
Yeah. Or, there's got to be we'll put a shower curtain there to keep the rain out, but we'll put a nice drape over it or something. Anyway, Kevin, thank you very much. What they used to call them in the if you didn't before you had your drapes, if you taped, of course, when they used to have newspapers, you taped the newspapers on the inside of the window when you first moved in. They used to call those Irish linens, the newspapers.
Yeah.
Anyway, take care of yourself, bud. Talk to you next week. SP Futures up 3. NASDAQ Futures up 12. Be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates, and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. It's Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 3, NASDAQ Futures up 13. We're trying to hang on to the big rally of yesterday, really the last couple of days. Carl, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Just getting my espresso down my gullet, as I usually do.
Well, good.
That sounds good.
Yeah, sounds good. do you keep pouring sugar into it like the guy in, what was the name of the movie where they were trying to eat the monitor lizard or something, the last one, and the guy ended up with a mob guy, and he makes the kid the espresso, and he says, just keep pouring sugar. The kid goes, this is terrible. Just keep pouring sugar in it. It's still terrible.
Oh, no. I'm somewhat of a coffee snob. I actually have a little roaster in my garage.
Oh, God.
What is that? Well, you have to, because it sets a fire alarm off in the house.
Now, do you have your own still and your own make your own beer, too?
Oh, we don't talk about that. You know, you're not supposed to do that sort of thing.
Well, you can make your own beer.
The still part.
You can make your own beer.
You can make your own beer. Yeah, that's legal.
The I know somebody made a. They, it was of course a metalworking place. Well, they had a gorgeous still. It was way better than the Hawkeye Pierce one. It was all stainless steel. It was nice. Just saying.
Well, you know, it's not really all that complicated if you want to do it. It's just yeah.
Well, you needed some little swirling thing of copper going along to cool off, right?
Well, for anybody who's crazy enough to attempt this at home, you need to be aware that when you ferment things and then you distill them, there is a small fraction in there that is actually methanol. It's the part that's actually the reason you get a hangover most of the time from booze. And when you distill it, of course, you concentrate it. Well, methanol will make you blind. And so the first cut that comes off of it is not suitable for consumption.
Allegedly, you can smell the difference. I've never done it, but that's what my guy
said. Well, so if you're going to do that, be aware that there is some science behind it, and if you do not pay attention to it, you won't be seeing anything.
Well, we did a tour of a ethanol plant, which is basically a huge still, right? And,
right.
So at the end, the guy gives me this jar of the stuff, you know, the end product. And he said, well, you actually could drink it, but you'd have the world's worst hangover. He said, because whatever the last thing they do to booze or vodka or whatever, they don't do. So there's some kind of purification that you do that they don't do. He said, you could drink it. You're not going to die and go blind, but you're going to have a headache that you kind of wish you were dead. So whatever.
Well, yeah, the interesting thing is the stuff that they make, that goes in fuel. That's because, you know, it's what they do with all the corn nowadays, right? They all make ethanol to screw up your car. Which would be okay. And here's a little interesting aside to that. It is completely worthless in terms of reducing emissions in modern vehicles that have O2 sensors and computer controlled mixtures. It is extremely useful in older carbureted engines in terms of reducing emissions, but it does absolutely nothing in modern vehicles, and yet we can't get rid of it because of the subsidies in the Farm Belt.
Well, you can't. There's no way you can put it in a carbureted car.
Well, actually, you can put it in your lawnmower engine, which is carbureted, and assuming that the seals and stuff don't get destroyed by the ethanol, it's okay.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And the difference, when they first put them in cars, and obviously you know more about this than me, but I'll lob this out there. The thing that went were all the seals. They didn't realize it would deteriorate the seals. So when they upgraded all the seals, then it became okay to use. Am I correct?
Right. Right. And it's, well, it's the, you know, the same thing originally. The one of the things that the lead in gasoline was used for was lubrication of valve guides. And so it, and the valve seats. And so if you have an engine that is old enough that hasn't been retrofitted and you run non-leaded fuel in it, you'll eventually destroy it.
Yeah, the lifters weren't, they weren't self-sealing, right? So you had the lead caused the seal.
It's a lubricant, which is the other thing. It's that it's softer. So it's basically that it's the principle of, you know, that goes first. All right, same thing applies with a lot of lubricants that go into like rear ends and differentials and things like that. The premise behind it is that the lubricant, there's a chemical film that gets formed on the surfaces and it shears first, and by doing so protects the gear.
So what about people, if your differential was making noise back in the day, would put hamburger in there to quiet it down? Now, would that work?
Well, people are crazy. I mean, you know, but yeah, the snake oil never solves mechanical problems, okay?
By the way, just as a piece I'll throw out there, since Carl's got us on fuels, we did have a couple of guys who were experts on ethanol, and they said, we'll see if you know this, Carl, that the actual best mix, if you have a flex vehicle, the best mix ethanol to gasoline was how much?
Well, it depends on what are you trying to optimize here.
We're trying to optimize. It says the ethanol gives you a little more power, but it gives you less mileage.
Correct. So, it has less energy in it.
Yeah, but it raises the octane. It raises the energy in the gas, right? It's like putting octane in there, or like putting one of the stuff.
Well, no, it doesn't raise the energy. That's the problem. Ethanol has fewer BTUs in it than gasoline.
Okay.
But what it does do is it raises the octane level.
That's what I mean.
And the resistance to resistance to detonation. So I mean, I have a flex fuel vehicle. My Suburban can run on anything up to E85. And one of the interesting things about it is that ethanol has a higher boiling point as well. So in places where you have issues with fuel boil and the fuel pickup and stuff like that, it'll stop it. However, it gets a lot worse mileage with E85 in it. So I hope that stuff's nice and cheap, because if it's not, you're crazy to buy it.
Well, sometimes it's like 80 or 90 cents cheaper, and sometimes it's 20 cents. I don't. But anyway, this dude said that if you did the math, and you got 10% already in the gas, right? So if you do the math right between the regular pump and the E85 pump, you want 30% ethanol, because that gets you to the absolute best spot. You get all the good stuff from the ethanol with very little drop in the mileage.
Well, I don't know about very little. It's very detectable, especially in the truck, but even in a car that can run it between running straight gas. The problem is that where you can buy the fuel, it has no ethanol in it. It's typically expensive enough that it's not worth it.
Well, here sometimes it's 70 cents cheaper. But so in other words, if I filled up my tank, which is roughly 40 gallons, according to him, I would put 30 gallons of regular gas, which are 3 gallons of ethanol,
and then 10 of E85.
Of E85. And he said, because you barely notice it on the mileage, and it helps the other stuff.
Yeah, well, there was a period of time that was about 6 months long where in northeast Ohio and southeast Michigan, the differential between gasoline and E85 was the E85 was about 60% of the price of the regular gas.
Well, now I'm going to say it's
in that situation, you're crazy not to burn the E85 if you can.
I'm going to say right when the gas is now up to like 315, 320 here, if you can find it in the burbs, the E85 is probably 240. But when gas was 240, E85 was like 220. So it really wasn't.
When this was happening in Michigan and Ohio, E85 was about $1.50.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, regular gas was, you know, in the mid to upper twos, and it was an absolute no brainer if your car could burn it to use it.
But that spread is very volatile. It moves around a lot.
Yes. Oh yeah.
I want to ask you some interesting auto question, but we'll go. Hey, what we're talking about Kevin a little bit. And I kept saying I should hold this on for Carl, but I didn't. You talk to everybody right now about what's going on. You talk to people who give you their local thing, and it sure looks like that the unemployment claims are not going down as much as people thought. You get seemingly a lot of people are still being laid off in the management side of businesses, and yet everybody seems to want everybody for $10 an hour to go do the other stuff. And there's a big split. And I mean, when they talk about everybody needs a job, but what they really need, it looks to me, is the $70,000 worker to say, "I'll go work and make pizzas," is what they're really looking for, and that's not happening, Carl. I mean, or where am I wrong with this?
Well, you're not wrong. You're right. The problem you have with what's happened with cost push inflation is that, I mean, you know, how do you stay alive flipping pizzas?
Well, that's the thing. Okay. You can't.
And the problem is you can't, right? And so there is a point at which, I mean, you know, people are irrational for a long period of time, right? I mean, we just went through a mass insanity in this country with COVID, and to some extent we still are. But when you get down to the reality of it, everybody's like, "Oh, those lazy bums, they won't go back." No, the person that is, you know, being offered a $10 an hour job, they can't survive on $10 an hour. They may as well sit at home and smoke bongs.
Well, right.
That doesn't sound that bad.
Well, if you can find a way to sit at home and smoke bongs, why would you get up and go to work for the same outcome?
I guess my question is, why not just eat the gummies or something?
Well, whatever, you know. But I mean, I guess my thing with all of this is that, and you're not seeing any recognition of this in the political class at the state or the federal levels. Okay, absolutely zero. I don't care which side of the aisle you're on. I don't care what your politics are. This is basic, you know, wallet style economics. Nobody goes out and does something that provides them at the end of the day zero remuneration. They don't keep anything, right? I mean, they can't manage to pay the power bill and the rent. And now you just had the CDC extend their completely illegal eviction moratorium. Right. I'm sorry. I don't care whether or not you think it's a good idea or not. They do not have the constitutional legal authority to do that. That's the end of the conversation. The Fifth Amendment prohibits it. The government cannot take things from people without compensating them for their fair market value. If you're not paying people's rent, then the person who is living there without having to pay is getting something. However, the other person's getting hosed, and you don't have the authority within our system of government to do that.
I would agree. Since the government is in charge of actually throwing the people out, I guess you could just say we're not going to do that for a while, which is some.
Yeah, but think about what happens. You know, think about the distortion here, because what do you get when you create a situation where the majority of rental units in this country historically have been owned by small business people. Individuals that have one or two, you know, or they own a small apartment building, you know, a little thing with, you know, six units in it or duplex or whatever. That is essentially gone at this point in time. And you're having the Blackstones of the world that are coming in and buying them all up.
Right.
Well, the Blackstones of the world are getting the money at zero interest. Right.
Yeah.
There, which is driving the price up. Okay. Well, you know, there was this article in Bloomberg that was basically along the lines of "you'll own nothing and love it," right? That, you know, that renting is the, you know, is the answer to all the problems of America with mobility and the ability for people to go where the jobs are and all this and that, blah blah blah, blah. And essentially that liquefaction of the housing stock was a tremendous net positive for the economy. It was a good thing, and they pointed out that anything that's liquid has a liquidity premium on the price. Well, of course it does, right? I mean, stocks
stocks trade above intrinsic value in part because I can sell them anytime I want to, 5 days a week during the business day, right?
Yeah.
And I can buy them anytime I want to. Houses don't work like that. If you want to buy or sell a house, it takes some time to do. You have the entire process with the title transfers and the inspections and, you know, and everything else. It doesn't happen in an afternoon. And the problem with that, from their point of view, is that that means that that premium is less or non-existent, and they think that this is a terrible thing. Well, my rebuttal to that is that the stability in price that comes from that lack of liquidity is a tremendous positive thing, because here's the thing. If I have a job, I don't know what my, you know, I know what my housing nut is for a extended period of time. As soon as you destroy that, what happens? Every time that the lease comes up for renewal, it goes up 30%. Now what? I have to move.
Well, that's right. I think we're starting in the theme that I didn't start out there. What did Yogi say? If we don't know where we're going, we might find out we end up someplace else or something like that. Something is getting squirrely on me, Carl, but somehow between what the press is doing or not doing, or we're not reading enough as a population, but I'm sensing that when people say what's good for the economy now is really good for 100 companies and not for your economy, my economy, the smaller people's economy, it's good for, like, them. Yeah, if you're somebody who wants to move somebody from, you know, Chicago to L.A. for $20 an hour, I guess it's better for you if I'm renting instead of having a house, because I'm much more mobile. But it might not be better for me.
Well, so whether or not it's better depends on your personal situation.
Right.
Okay, so what I have, you know, the advice I gave my daughter, I said, until you figure out where you want to be and you know you want to be there for at least 5 years, you're crazy to buy something. All right, because just between just on the transaction costs, you're going to pay them on both sides of the deal, and you're going to pay them in terms of a higher price when you buy, and you're going to pay them in terms of it coming out of your settlement numbers when you sell, and that's just how it is. There is a built-in transaction cost to this, and you know, there's nothing you can do about it.
It's like trading. However, it's like trading options. If the market's 6-8, you're paying 8, you're selling it for 6. It means you got to make $2 to break even.
Well, that's right, and that's, I mean, that's just the reality of anything that has, you know, that has transaction costs. And so, and when it comes to real estate, they're substantial. But the other side of that is, if you know you want to live in a particular place, and you know you want to be there, putting a clamp on your monthly nut to be okay is tremendously good from your point of view. Now it's great when you're young. You have no dependents. You know there's no children. You're not worried about the stability of school systems and things like this. And you know, hey, you get a better job offer. You know, pays $20,000 more a year. You know, three states over. You just pull up and you go. And that is good from a standpoint of the worker, from the individual. Where it's not so good is when you get the other side of it, which is Blackstone comes in and buys up your rental from the small landlord and raises the rent by 50%. And you have to go. So there's always a yang to the yin. And what I don't like about this sort of a trend is that the ratchet upward, and this is one of the dangers in any larger metropolitan environment, is that the tax ratchet is something that over the space of 10 or 20 years, you think you have a stable housing environment, and yet the destruction that occurs to the inherent value of places is unbelievable. I mean, you know, around Chicago, I still track my old house that I owned up there right after I sold my internet company. And it just came on the market fairly recently and sold and turned over. And so I got to see what the people who owned it in the interim had done to it, because they had, you know, all the pictures up, right? The outside, the inside, everything else. They spent a ton of money on doing other things to it. Okay, now when I bought it, it was new. It had just been built. They finished the basement. They did and it was all very high quality work. You know, looks really nice. All right, but when you look at that, then you look at over the period of time from then to now, that property lost value in real terms.
You
and what was the reason? Take a guess why.
Well, just degradation. I mean,
the taxes. Property taxes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that too, but I was going to give an example of Audrey, who comes on the show once in a while. There's one section where just what you said, Carl, is sticks right out like a red light. Is that there's an area in Chicago, actually right near where you played golf last week, Matty. That whole area was a development with these condominiums, and they traded 175, that type of thing, you know, before the 2008 stuff. So people that have been there now, you know, whatever, 13, 14 years, a lot of them are leaving, you know. And if you didn't do anything to it, which means, you know, you didn't wreck it, but you didn't, but now the kitchen has been used for 14 years, the bathrooms have been used. It's not like you didn't trash them or anything, but they need new, you know, new stuff.
Right.
You're selling it for roughly 150. If you put the 25 grand in it to get it back to where it's quote new, you're getting essentially the same price as what you paid for it. So you're not quote lose, but there are degradations on these things, right? Plus, the area, plus the taxes.
You're telling me in 15 plus years, they're not worth anything more? I find that hard to believe.
There's all kinds of condos. They don't always, man, because people put new ones up right around them, you know.
Yeah,
right.
And plus the taxes have gone up 40-50%.
Well, that's that's obviously a deal breaker.
So, but I'm saying I'm not exact on the numbers. If you kept it modern, you might get 190.
I'm just saying, having bought a condo recently, and looking at the past sold numbers that you can see, this so and so bought it 4 years ago, so and so bought it 8 years ago. I mean, we're talking huge increases in values.
That's what
the city.
That's what they did. Now the question is, hopefully you will.
I don't understand what you just
said.
What
I'm saying is they did. They had increases. They managed to dodge it to the point where
it doesn't always work that way. Yeah. I'm just saying your timeline that you laid out doesn't align with what I saw.
But this is
that's all I'm saying.
But this is an area where there's always another new condo. You know, it's not restricted, like there's only going to be so many places on Armitage where you live. The land has gone up more for you than
that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about. I mean, right now where Audrey lives. I mean, there's always another farm. There can be another subdivision. You know, it's not like you're locked into Manhattan. You know, it's not getting any bigger. You know what I'm saying.
Well, yeah. I mean, everything is more complex than a lot of people make it out to be.
Right.
Okay. When you get down to and that's the thing with economics and the economy in general is that it sounds simple, and yet that's the refuge of the person who doesn't really want to think it through and say, well, but there are these confounding factors that I can't take into account because I don't have any way to do it. And therefore, you're just going to have to, there is risk in here, and here is where it comes from, but I can't delineate it. I can't get it out of the transaction.
Well, there was a guy, Matty, in the OEX pit, crazy guy, but his tough little dude, his kids were into that the combined fighting, like long before anybody even knew what it was, because one of the kids was a state wrestling champion to start with. And anyway, his kids were in, they were going to Japan and doing these mixed martial arts before anybody knew what it was. But he buys this place, Naperville or somewhere, and it was pretty high-end community, so he pays up for the joint. And meanwhile, the guy knocks down, the farm across the street and builds places about the same size, not that much different looking, but nowhere near the amenities for, 80% of the cost. He had that place for 5 years, and I don't think he made a dime on it. There was always some place with the same square footage, with the same something on the market for 30 grand less than I paid for this thing, and it just buried me. Now that's not going to happen in a city, I don't think.
You just never know. It's like where my parents lived until my mother passed, rather tony subdivision, limited space because it's an island. And thought of as a very desirable place to live. Good schools, all the usual stuff, right? Over the last, 15 years when they were around, between the tax increases and everything else, in nominal terms, I didn't even get back what they put in when I sold the place after my mother passed.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. I mean, it really is.
And it, well, and you know what? The thing, and here's the bottom line is that there's just better available at a cheaper price. So why would you buy this?
Well, I'm going to say I won't.
I mean, that's how it works, right?
Well, I won't say she's my significant other's place, but Audrey has a very nice place in Orland, and I don't think it's appreciated all that much since she bought it. You know, she bought it like at the at the old. But the interesting part is the place she owned before that appreciated dramatically, which allowed her to buy this place. So if you were to take her whole lifetime of the last 30 years owning property, her big jump came in before 2007, like most people's did, and not much thereafter, until maybe recently. Definitely recently if you're in the right area. So a lot of people who tell you, man, I bought this place for $350 and it hasn't gone up a nickel. You say, but yeah, Joe, you bought the last place for $100 and you sold it for $225. You know, and that's what allowed you to buy this place. So you sort of have to.
It's like, I got into it with some people, up here, because I sold my place in Florida, bought this. And they're like, well, you should have sat on place in Florida because, it's easily worth another $250. over what it was, before the pandemic. And I said, well, yeah, that's true. I said, however, the place up here is worth it.
Yeah, you've done it up here. I mean, I got a question for you, Carl, and this has actually been we only got a couple minutes here, but as I've been doing the show, the one thing that I keep looking at, and we're starting to see it happen now with these lower wages, people don't want to come back to work for those prices and so forth. Or can't or won't, whatever anybody's opinion is on that. The thing that struck me is that over the last 12, 15 years, we've had this, actually maybe 20 years, we've had this dramatic inflation that's been in a couple areas that people don't recognize. I mean, if you've had your hospitalization paid for, you don't even know, or you don't even care that somebody has kept the inflation numbers there at 6% of the economy when it's 20. And maybe in your hospitalization's gone up three times in the last 20 years when the numbers tell you it should be up half. But I kept looking at this median income, 2000 and median income today, which is up, these guys are wrong, I think. They got 35,000. I'm going to say 37, but it was 31 in 2000. So it's up maybe 20% in 20 years. And the thought has always been to me, after living through it before, that if we ever had a general inflation, we were going to really eviscerate 60% of the population. And
you're right, Chief. And, I wrote an article on this, it was probably about a month ago. And I pointed out that the last time we did this sort of stupidity was, late 70s and early 80s. And what it did was it forced the second person in the household into the workforce. Because that was the only way that you could stay above water.
Well, you're not going to stay above water with two people making $10 an hour.
Well, the problem is we already used up that buffer.
Yep.
It's gone. You can't do it again. And it goes back to something that I told my father when he was still alive and he tried to run this BS that, I paid into this program and that program and I deserve it. I said, you can only spend a given dollar once. You already voted to spend it. It's gone.
Yep.
Okay.
Carl, we got
bad news for you. You burned up the cash.
Hold that thought, bud. SP Futures up 7 now. NASDAQ Futures up 23. Looks like we're going up again today. Right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber. Key inflation indicator rises 3.4% in May from a year early. That's the PCE. We'll go through that in a second here because I'm sure Carl has some thoughts. S&P futures up 8.25, NASDAQ futures up 34, Dow up 115. Again, individual stocks in the Dow, Caterpillar up 241, Nike up almost $18. They had earnings last night. We don't care where they got working in those plants. We're just buying Nikes. We got J.P. Morgan up $1.09, so the Dow stuff is moving up here. Just like it was moving down last week when everything else was kind of unchanged. Well, this week it's coming back on all that, really. European markets, DAX down 17. That's 0.1%, so call it pretty flat. FTSE up 22. That's 0.3%. CAC around down 9. That's 0.1%. They were up, I think, over 1% yesterday, so these guys had a big move yesterday, and they're really not giving any of it back today. Well, a little bit. Nikkei up, these guys were all subdued yesterday, they're all making up for it today. Nikkei up 190, 0.7%, Shanghai up 40, that's 1.1%, Hang Seng up 405, 1.4%. These guys were either down or in change yesterday. We've been kind of following us kind of crazily. South Korea's KOSPI, not even Carl knew that the South Korea was called the KOSPI Index. They closed a record high. Yesterday, Dow was up 322, S&P up 24, NASDAQ up 97, so a very positive day. Yesterday, bonds unchanged at 1.48, the Bund minus 0.17, Japan positive 0.04, UK positive 0.74. Oil back up over $73, up 2 cents, 73.32, Brent up 8 cents, 75.64, natural gas up 3 cents, 3.45, and I'm going to ask Carl a comment about why we're using all natural gas. I'm guessing it's those quick turn on places in California trying to get air conditioning for everybody. RBOB is unchanged at 227. Gold is up $10, 1786. Still struggling to get back to 1800. Down so low, it's starting to look like up, Manny, as they used to say. Silver down up 27 cents, 26.32. Copper unchanged, 431. And we've got crypto, which I forgot to give last time. 33,237 is Bitcoin. It's down $1,500. Manny, we have forced traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. That earlier hazmat situation on the inbound Edens right at the Kennedy has been cleared, so they did a nice job getting that cleared after a semi-jackknife, but we have all kinds of traffic delays on the Edens and Kennedy heading into downtown right now. But that's been cleared. The only crash in the area right now on the expressways is on the tri-state. Northbound side, just before Roosevelt Road, we have a crash blocking the right lane, and that's causing stop-and-go traffic on the northbound side of the tri-state. Southbound side, not affected. Traffic building steadily on the Eisenhower and Stevenson, and we have some flooding on the Stevenson throughout the inbound side, but especially right before Pulaski and again before California. So you're going to have to slow down and navigate around that due to the standing water. In fact, all of the northwest Indiana and northeast Illinois is under a flash flood watch through tomorrow morning due to all the storms from last night and more expected today and this evening. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, clouds and rain and a high of 81. Right now it's overcast and 71 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 106. Right now it's clear and 84. In sports, the Cubs combined for a no-hitter last night, beating the Dodgers in L.A. 4-0. Four different pitchers combined to no-hit the Dodgers. It was the Cubs' 17th no-hitter in team history. It was the 7th no-hitter in the MLB this year. But the Cubs, they own the Dodgers so far this year. They're 4-0 against L.A., Chief.
Can you name the Cubs' 7 no-hitters?
Probably not. If I sat and thought about it, I could probably name 4 or 5. Do you think you can?
I bet I can't get 7, but I can get probably 6.
That's pretty good. We can play that game. White Sox were off last night. They'll host the Mariners tonight, 7:10 on the south side. Diamondbacks are off as well. They're at San Diego tonight. That's 7 o'clock Arizona time, first pitch. And the Phoenix Suns lost Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals to the L.A. Clippers, 106-92. Phoenix still leads that best of 7, 2-1. Chief.
Test me here. I'm going to say... Carl's going to think I'm nuts, which he already does. I'm going to say Don Cardwell. I'm going to say Kenny Holzman twice. I'm going to say Bert Hooten. I'm going to say Zambrano. And who is the guy this year and then last night?
That's pretty good. By the way, it was 7 no-hitters in the MLB this year. The Cubs have thrown 17 no-hitters.
Right.
But that's still pretty good.
I could probably get
you
10 or 11.
You missed 2 by Jake Arrieta.
Yep, okay.
And Alec Mills threw one last year.
Right. I knew somebody did last year.
Yeah, and that was kind of a fluke, although I do think he's a pretty good pitcher.
I don't think he thinks it's a fluke.
But you know, he could be better than we think. But that was pretty good, Chief.
Because I watched both Kenny Holzman's. I was real young. I mean, I think the TV was on when I was a kid when Don Cardwell threw. Didn't Bert Hooten throw one too? Right.
I don't know. I'm trying to find the list here, but I'll find it at some point.
I think he did it in like his first or second start. It was like a September start.
Wasn't there a huge gap between the Zambrano one and then the one that happened before it?
Yeah.
I don't think there was one in my lifetime until the Zambrano one.
I'm going to say Bert Hooten is Zambrano.
Yeah, so what year was Hooten's?
Oh, he was right after Holzman and those guys, so it had to be 70s.
Yeah, it was 70s. So I was like, I was born in 83, so I'm like, I don't think I saw a Cubs no-hitter my whole life until Zambrano threw that one in 2008. And then now there's been a bunch since then.
Well, Steve Stone, Carl, interesting. I ran into Steve at a score function when John and I were on the score, and I think we were at the Skybox at Comiskey. Well, the new part wasn't Comiskey. So all the other, you know, slumps are kind of talking. Well, they all leave early, right? So I'm standing there. It's me and Steve. So we start BSing, and I go, you know, Steve, I got a question for you. Because I remember a game that I watched when I was a kid. When I wasn't a kid, I was out of school and everything working. But where he had thrown a no-hitter to like, the seventh inning, and he was walking people. And finally, they took him out, you know, sort of like last night. And I said, you know, I'm going to ask you about this one game you were pitching, and you had no hitter through 6 or 7, and they, oh yeah, I remember that game. And I go, really? And he goes, he had a sore arm, and he had taken. He said, I took like a pain pill that I normally took, and I took something else. And he goes, there was a reaction to him, and I was absolutely, you know, crazy. I could barely see. He said, but I was pitching pretty good, and he goes, I couldn't see the signs. And I was having trouble finding the plate with the ball. So the fact that I was a little wild, I mean, nobody could hit the damn thing. But so the catcher comes out, and he says, he gave me the guy's name. I remember the guy's name, but I forgot it today. And he goes, he was one of the best receivers that I ever pitched to. And he said, just throw whatever you want. I'll catch it. And he goes, like, no catcher can do that, but this guy could. And the guy says, just throw whatever you want. They can't hit it anyway. He goes, it's all over the place. Just throw it. And he did. By the time he got to, like, the seventh inning, he had pitched so many pitches and walks that they ended up bringing somebody else in who didn't, they didn't make it to the end of the game with a no-hitter. He goes, oh, yeah, I'll never forget that game. I couldn't believe it. Anyway, Carl, I was looking here at I got all kinds of stuff up on the screen. And they just came out with this PCE number. And I just, you know, I'm looking at this, the comparison to CPI. This is the, what do they call it? What is the PCE? It's a personal consumption. Well, the definition of the damn thing, you probably know this. Personal consumption expenditure PCE measures the component statistic for consumption and gross domestic product collected by the United States Bureau of Economic Analysis. So it's different than Bureau of Labor Statistics, right? They do the CPI.
Right.
It consists of the actual and imputed expenditures of households and includes data pertaining to durable and non-durable goods and services. It is essentially a measure of goods and services targeted towards individuals and consumed by individuals. In other words, it's supposed to be the less volatile measure of the PCE index is the core PCE price index, which includes the more volatile seasonal food and energy prices. But the difference in the basket here is striking, Carl. And it's a simple, this is on Wikipedia. So these are pieces of the basket. Food and beverages, CPI is 15%, PCE is 14%, so pretty close. Housing in the CPI is 42%. PCE is 26%. In today's day and age, is anybody only 26% of their salary goes to the housing? I mean, it's hard.
You know, yeah, I mean, the way that they do weighting, well, you know, I have long argued that one of the biggest posing in terms of how they do the CPI is that they don't count housing prices. They, for those who own houses, they instead call it owner's equivalent rent, which right. is a flat out scam. It is, in other words, what they index to is what you would pay to rent your residence if you own it, not what you're actually paying to own it. The problem with that is that as interest rates go down, the OER goes down because the cost of financing goes down, and therefore the cap rate that a owner who is renting your residence, if they were to own your house instead of you, would accept goes down. Right?
Right.
So what this means is that they deliberately gamed the CPI numbers over the space of 40 years into the declining trend in interest rates from the early 1980s to today.
Right. What sense does this make? There's lines here. Rent, CPI is 5.8%. I got news for you. I don't know of anybody who's only paying 5.8%.
5% right to rent.
For rent. But the PCE is 3.4%.
Which is even more stupid.
Yeah, but now owner's equivalent rent is 23.4 in a CPI and 12.9 in the other. So we're saying that if you own your house, it's four times as much to live there? I don't know about that.
The deliberate tampering with these indices in such a, and they did it, and the intent to do it was to essentially ride the declining interest rate trend from the inflation in the late 70s and early 1980s and impute that back into both labor costs through those unions that at the time existed, and much less today, that were indexed against CPI, which many of those contracts were, but also, far more important to the government, is that Social Security is indexed against that.
Right.
Okay, and so their benefit payments are indexed. So they deliberately hosed you by doing this in the statistics. And you know, people always talk about hedonic substitution and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, okay, that stuff does matter, and it does impact the numbers. But if you want to see where the real distortions are, the ones that make you take it in the shorts, it's in those two sets.
Well, here's the medical care line. CPI, it's 6.2% of the basket.
Right.
PCE, it's 22, But then they have adjusted numbers here. They adjust the 22 down to 5.
Well, okay. So first off, now it's 6. And if you look back a few years, it was 0.8 in the CPI, which was ridiculously stupid. Okay. But anybody that thinks in the world of, you know, of today that it's that is still nuts.
Well, according to the adjusted PCE, apparel is 5.5% of your basket, and medical care is 5. Are they talking about an 18-year-old, or what are they talking about? Who possibly, when medical is 20% of the GDP, how can it be less than apparel?
Well, all you have to do to figure out how this stuff really plays out is what you just did. Okay, look at what percentage of GDP is a particular part of the basket. Okay, medical care is 20% of GDP. Well, if medical care is 20% of GDP, how can it be less than 20% would get spent?
Well, here's another one though: is education and communication is 5.4%. Now, I'm going to say that education is a combination of higher education, private education, and certainly property taxes, because 50 to 60%
goes into schools. Right.
Goes into schools. So, tell me anybody that's 5% of their basket. I mean, come on. I mean, most places now your taxes are as much as your mortgage.
Well, now you got to be careful, because that's only because you live in a blue hive and that's your experience. Come down here and buy something.
Well, now something else is funding your education, because the education costs the same both places.
Sort of. No, it don't. But there are a heck of a lot less Taj Mahalish in places like this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, interesting. I don't know if you ever heard of my friend Dr. Johnson come on as a psychologist guy. He lives in, I don't know if it's still the same, but he told me at one point New Hampshire and Vermont, I don't know which one was which, had totally separate visions of education. And one of the states spent like incredibly more, you know, ceramic tile locker rooms where the other guys, you know, would be concrete, you know, that sort of thing. And he said the interesting part was at the end of the year, the test scores were almost equivalent.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not saying everybody should have concrete locker rooms, but you know where they had incredibly ugly concrete locker rooms? Was the old Chicago Stadium. It was like the other team had to come in. The visiting locker room was like the most basic thing you ever saw. But if you were the other team, must have had to come in and totally dress up everybody's locker and put curtains up there to make it look good, because everybody had an interview in there, it always looked great. And we had a charity thing over there, and I said, "Yeah, you guys can go shower in a visitor's locker room." I walk in, I go, "This is there's high schools that are way better than what is this?" Anyway, just saying. But it didn't matter when the Bulls were winning over there. The locker rooms were fine, right?
Here's the thing: you have to look at what are the goals. Okay, the goal of a public education system should be to turn out competent adults that can actually go into the workforce and do something useful. I mean, if that's not what the goal is, then you're going at this the wrong way. You know, playing critical race theory and everything else does exactly zero to advance that. So, and so do building Taj Mahal style schools.
Well, I would love to see somebody, I mean, you know, PTI, we've always been a payer for hospitalization, and we're painfully obvious of the, you know, the 30 years we've been in business, how much it went up every single year. When I started as a market maker, Carl, in 1980, as soon as you signed up to be a market maker, your clearing firm, before you did trade one and you paid them, you know, a dollar a contract or something, before you did trade one, they took care of your medical. And if you hired a clerk, it was $75 a month, even if the clerk had a family.
Right.
So, I mean, it's moved, shall we say, dramatically from there. But these guys have now recreation is more than medical care. Name me a family. If you count the hospital, I mean, I'm talking about Obamacare. Is what? Even if you get the crummiest plan, is $1,500 a month or more, with a $12,000 or $13,000 deductible. Explain to me how a company, a family pays 50% more than that for recreation. What are they doing?
Well, they don't, and you know, but I'll tell you what, though, looking at this table, and one of the things I don't like about this BEA release, I used to do articles on it every month when it came out. One of the issues I have with it is that all the data behind it is fairly opaque. Okay, I mean, you get this nice little table with, you know, with a dozen numbers on it. That's pretty much all there is. But when you look at the trend on this, it's pretty ugly. So you have personal income that you got a big spike from the checks, right, in January, and then a bigger one in March. But then when you look at DPI, disposable personal income, the last 2 months have been terrible. And in chain 2012 dollars, they were really negative in April. They're negative again for May. Now, of course, May didn't have any big changes in the, you know, we hand out free money stuff, right? So what you're seeing is a negative trend from April. April was when that all fell off. March had the big spike. But then in PCE, in chain dollars, in current dollars is flat this month, this last month for May. In chain dollars is down 0.4. And what is that? That's all inflation, right? Because, I mean, that's what that is. Chain dollars is an attempt to take inflation out of it. So what you basically have is incomes are decreasing in real terms by a substantial amount, and inflation is going up, and people are not borrowing to spend because your PCE number is flat on a current dollars basis, and in real terms, it's going down. So, and on top of that, you have a PCE index that taking out, you know, going off the gross, including food and energy, is up 4% annualized. It's 3.9.
Well, yeah, and those are their numbers. I mean, it's...
Well, yeah, and the thing is this goes... Here's a sequence for the last 5 months, all right, on PCE. 1.4, 1.6, 2.4, 3.6, 3.9.
Well,
I don't like the trend on that. Do you?
No, did you... listen to your man, Paul. He's in front of the representatives, which always get kind of weirdo questions from those people. But the African-American lady, and it wasn't Maxine Waters, and she said something to the effect of, I'm tired of listening with your inflation numbers when the people in my district, the inflation numbers are way higher than that, and you keep telling me there's no problem when everybody's prices are going up, and what's the deal? And he kind of hemmed and hawed and, you know, BS'd his way around it and couldn't wait till the 5 minutes were over, or 4 minutes, wherever they were. But it's a legitimate question. I mean, how do you not answer that one? But they don't. I mean, it's just they just keep...
Well, he doesn't. But the thing is that, you know, here's what I hear all the time from people that claim that it's different this time and it's all going to be okay. The Fed can never taper. The Fed can never reduce its balance sheet. They just can't do it. If they do it, the government blows up, therefore they won't. And nothing will force their hand and nothing will change us. Well, this data table says that's a bunch of BS. And if they don't stop it, within the next year or so, you're going to have a dislocation within the economy that's going to be much worse than what we saw in the late 1970s and early 80s, because there isn't the ability to take that buffer, that next person, and put them into the workforce. That next person isn't there.
Carl, what I go back, and I don't, you know, I'm not accusing you of being ancient, being older than me, but everybody talks about the last time, especially the people younger than me, for sure. And all they really pick up is the last couple of years, all right, when we did have I believe that the inflation stuff, it takes a long time to work its way through the numbers, even if you're honest. So I remember vividly the last couple of years when Volcker was tearing the economy apart, and there really wasn't any inflation. I think he was amazingly heavy-handed, and he could have taking the foot off the economy's neck probably 18 months to 2 years before he did, and because he was waiting for the numbers to change, but the real world had already changed. I think he could probably have saved half the savings and loans. Maybe that's too enthusiastic. But what I don't recall, because I was in school, worrying about getting a beer every night, I don't recall the as we started out with inflation, I mean, none of these unions... And nobody had a inflation clause in their purchase agreement. No union had an inflation clause. This is probably 1968, and this stuff starts to percolate a little bit after they went off. And then Bretton Woods in 72, it gets worse, and all of a sudden the Arab oil embargo comes, and now it's full bore. Now, but But when there had to be a couple of years of real wailing and gnashing of teeth before Pullman started putting an escalation clause in the rail car contracts, before the unions, I mean, you don't just get a meeting, you know, a union contract expiring right when you want it. It must have had to wait a while for it to expire and people saying, hey, this inflation's a problem, let's get something in there. I don't remember, and I haven't read everything, of the interim year where the problem was really out there for all to see, and when people started to alleviate it through contracts. It couldn't have happened in a day, Carl. What was that interim period of time like? Have you read anything on that?
You know, I was too young to be paying as much attention to it as I probably should have. But of course, you know, I didn't know that I should have.
Yeah. Well, we blamed it on the Arabs for a while.
But what I do know is that a lot of things did happen with regards to, a lot of the other things, within the business world, because my father was the CPA and the controller for a company in downtown Detroit at the time. And they got destroyed by the union and the cost escalation problems that happened during those years. The company was literally put out of business.
Well, sure, because they didn't have escalation clauses in their stuff. I mean, Pullman.
Well, yeah, and I mean, yeah. And they got ruined by it.
Well, if you were a supplier,
I mean, this was a firm, by the way, that had been around for 100 years.
Well, we got a dash, Carl, but I was out with Joan Esposito last week, and I was explaining this, and she goes, you mean I should have one of those in my contract? I go, you sure should. Yes.
Yeah.
But people don't even think of it now. Carl, thank you very much. Talk to you next week, buddy. S&P futures now up 7. NASDAQ futures up 22. Looks like we'll have another up day today. Let's hope it stays there. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.